It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
WPHT, WPHT, HD, WOGL, HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. The revolution will be broadcast.
This is the next generation of talk. Now on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, Rich Zeoli.
Presidential immunity at the Supreme Court today. A big question is private acts versus official acts. Welcome back to the show. It is our fourth and final hour here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD, 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. Now, the question of what is an official act as president? Big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria. Go see him today for your perfect smile. VeneriaDental.com. V-A-N-A-R-I-A. VeneriaDental.com. What is an official act as president? And what happens if the president gets his advice from the Attorney General, from the Justice Department, and then it's viewed later on as having been bad advice? There were analogies brought up of Gerald Ford pardoning Richard Nixon. What would happen if, in hindsight, people said Gerald Ford was actually obstructing justice by pardoning Richard Nixon? Could they go after him criminally? Would that be protected under the impeachment clause of the Constitution? This whole thing really rests on the question, it seems to me, from the questioning about the justices, what is an official act? And how do you define that? Because presidents have done all kinds of different things over the years that you have to ask questions like, for example, I mean, could Barack Obama be charged with drone strikes? That question came up today. Michael Dreeben, the counselor to the special counsel, was asked that question. And I brought that up as well. And I think the answer is sure, because they come up with this idea of an institutional defense, that if the institution of the presidency is doing it, then the statute wouldn't apply. But it's not exactly a very clear-cut situation, because the president is the institution. So every act that stems from that would be his decision. Take a listen to this.
How about President Obama's drone strikes?
So the Office of Legal Counsel looked at this very carefully and determined that, number one, the federal murder statute does apply to the executive branch. The president wasn't personally carrying out the strike, but the aiding and abetting laws are broad. And it determined that a public authority exception that's built into statutes and that applied particularly to the murder statute, because it talks about unlawful killing, did not apply to the drone strike. So this is actually the way that the system should function. The Department of Justice takes criminal law very seriously. It runs it through the analysis very carefully with established principles. It documents them. It explains them. And then the president can go forward in accordance with it. And there is no risk of prosecution for that course of activity.
I disagree. I mean, the president's given his advice from his Justice Department. It says you're protected here under the public authority thing. And then a future Justice Department says, no, it was a crime. It was murder. And Justice Kavanaugh kept pressing the point of there's a very serious risk here of prosecutors targeting former presidents. And just because at the time the Department of Justice checked all the boxes and said, yeah, we don't think that this is murder, a drone strike, doesn't mean that a future prosecutor is not going to look at that and say, well, they were in on it. They were part of justifying the president's murder plot here. And it doesn't give him immunity just because his lawyers told him that it was okay to do. It doesn't give him this immunity. Here's a question from Justice Clarence Thomas that was asked today of Michael Dreeben. Take a listen to this.
Over in not so distant past, the presidents or certain presidents have engaged in various activity, coups or operations like Operation Mongoose when I was a teenager, and yet there were no prosecutions. Why? If what you're saying is right, it would seem that that would have been ripe for criminal prosecution of someone.
So, Justice Thomas, I think this is a central question. The reason why there have not been prior criminal prosecutions is that there were not crimes.
Why? Because there were not. They were not crimes. Is basically the answer. They were not crimes. But again, this is subject to interpretation. If a president takes a, you know, helps orchestrate a coup in a country, if a president does something that is in this very gray area of law, and it's interpreted as a crime in the future because there's no presidential immunity, you're damn right. I think the president could be charged. If he had knowledge that the CIA was working to overthrow a dictator and they killed the guy or other people, sure. Nothing stops a future prosecutor from looking at it through the lens of this was a crime if you don't establish this idea of immunity. And if you don't establish this idea of immunity, you're going to have situations where presidents are tried over and over again. And the system cannot stand in that sense. It can't stand. This is a situation when Trump's lawyer, John Sauer, Ketanji Brown Jackson, was trying to describe an America where the president has immunity. Listen to this exchange. I think it's a very good one here.
Benjamin Franklin said, as we view the prosecution of a chief executive as something that everybody cried out against as unconstitutional. And what George Washington said is, we're worried about factional strife, which will...
Let me put this worry on the table. If the potential for criminal liability is taken off the table, wouldn't there be a significant risk that future presidents would be emboldened to commit crimes with abandon while they're in office? It's right now the fact that we're having this debate because OLC has said that presidents might be prosecuted. Presidents from the beginning of time have understood that that's a possibility. That might be what has kept this office from turning into the kind of crime center that I'm envisioning. But once we say, no criminal liability, Mr. President, you can do whatever you want, I'm worried that we would have a worse problem than the problem of the president feeling constrained to follow the law while he's in office.
I respectfully disagree with that because the regime you've described is the regime we've operated under for 234 years. There has not been an expectation based on 234 years of unbroken political...
All right, let me ask you another question. Let me ask you another question.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. What's happening to Trump here is unprecedented because we've never gone down this road of charging a former president of the United States of America. We've never done this before. And so everything that you just described here has been the way it was up until they decided to go nuclear against Trump. John Sauer explained, without presidential immunity from criminal prosecution, there can be no presidency. There can be no presidency as we know it. Take a listen.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Without presidential immunity from criminal prosecution, there can be no presidency as we know it. For 234 years of American history, no president was ever prosecuted for his official acts. The framers of our Constitution viewed an energetic executive as essential to securing liberty. If a president can be charged, put on trial, and imprisoned for his most controversial decisions as soon as he leaves office, that looming threat will distort the president's decision-making precisely when bold and fearless action is most needed. Every current president will face de facto blackmail and extortion by his political rivals while he is still in office. The implications of the court's decision here extend far beyond the facts of this case. Could President George W. Bush have been sent to prison for obstructing an official proceeding or allegedly lying to Congress to induce war in Iraq? Could President Obama be charged with murder for killing U.S. citizens abroad by drone strike? Could President Biden someday be charged with unlawfully inducing immigrants to enter the country illegally for his border policies? The answer to all these questions is no. Prosecuting the president for his official acts is an innovation with no foothold in history or tradition and incompatible with our constitutional structure. The original meaning of the executive vesting clause, the framers' understanding and intent, an unbroken historical tradition spanning 200 years, and policy considerations rooted in the separation of powers all counsel against it. I welcome the court's questions.
It's an excellent opening statement. That was an excellent opening statement by the president's attorney. It was brief and succinct and spot on. Spot on, absolutely perfect. In fact, there's a question about, and this is a question that was asked by the Chief Justice. I'm sorry, Justice Alito. Could FBR have been charged? Could Franklin Delano Roosevelt have been charged for the internment of Japanese Americans? And again, this is the problem. It all depends on, I think, who the prosecutor is, who's looking backwards, who's deciding that the president has broken the law. If there's no immunity for those official actions, then it's an interpretation. And then it's left to a jury to determine whether or not the president committed a crime. But now you've put the president on trial, the former president on trial for official acts, and you've opened the door now to a situation where presidents are going to be very, very nervous about taking certain actions because of the possibility of being criminally charged. Here, take a listen to this exchange with Alito here and Michael Dreeben, the attorney for the Justice Department.
It is correct, Justice Alito, but I think that we should also consider the history of this country. As members of the court have observed, it's baked into the Constitution that any president knows that they are exposed to potential criminal prosecution. My friend says after impeachment and conviction, we don't read the impeachment judgment clause that way, but it's common ground that all former presidents have known that they could be indicted and convicted. And Watergate cemented that understanding. The Watergate smoking gun tape involved President Nixon and H.R. Haldeman talking about and then deciding to use the CIA to give a bogus story to the FBI to shut down a criminal investigation.
I mean, Mr. Sauer and others have identified events in the past where presidents have engaged in conduct that might have been charged as a federal crime, and you say, well, no, that's not really true. This is page 42 of your brief. So what about President Franklin D. Roosevelt's decision to intern Japanese Americans during World War II? Couldn't that have been charged under 18 U.S.C. 241, conspiracy against civil rights?
Today, yes, given this court's decision in Trump versus United States, in which Trump versus Hawaii, excuse me, where the court said Korematsu is overruled. I mean, President Roosevelt made that decision with the advice of his attorney general. That's a layer of
safeguard. Is that really true? I thought Attorney General Biddle thought that there was really no threat of sabotage, as did J. Edgar Hoover.
So I think that there is a lot of historical controversy, but it underscores that occurred during wartime. It implicates potential commander-in-chief concerns about the exigencies.
You see, let me just explain to you what this attorney's doing here for the Justice Department. He's trying to argue that everything a president has ever done prior to Trump is protected in some manner, shape, or form, except for what Trump did. And the point is here, yeah, but we overturned that. We said what he did was unconstitutional. Could you charge him? And at the time, the attorney general advised him. He had memos. He had briefings. Blah, 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 blah. This guy from the Justice Department, Michael Dreeben, essentially said today that every action a president has ever taken up until Donald Trump, up until the 45th president of the United States, is covered by something. So every analogy that was given, coups, drone strikes, internment camps, everything, all covered because they had basically their lawyers writing memorandums or covered by this or covered by that, except for what Trump's conduct. Trump's conduct is not covered by any of those things. That's the argument here. And we're supposed to believe that if we allow a prosecution of President Trump, former President Trump, that it'll be a one and done. One and done. Because Trump's conduct is so egregious outside the realm of this. Barack Obama freaking killed American citizens with drone strikes. Roosevelt imprisoned, against with no due process, Japanese, German, and Italian Americans. Charge him with kidnapping. Charge him with false imprisonment. No, but it's covered. President orchestrated a coup that resulted in civilian deaths. Well, that's covered by the blah, 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 blah. Everything except for what Trump did. They've got an excuse to cover why that president would not have faced criminal liability. Because what they want the justices to believe is that this would not set a precedent. And of course it would set a precedent. That's the entire point. It would set a horrible precedent for presidents. Let me continue with this here.
Of national defense that might provide an as-applied Article II challenge at the time. I'm not suggesting today, but the idea that a decision that was made and ultimately endorsed by this court, perhaps wrongly, in the Korematsu case, would support criminal prosecution under 241, which requires under United States versus Lanier that the right have been made specific so that there is notice to the president. I don't think that would have been satisfied.
All right, well, we could go through other historical examples. I won't do that. Let me just touch briefly.
Yeah, and so remember the other part too, which is, well, he was advised by his attorneys and blah, 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 blah. So then Justice Sonia Sotomayor says, well, what if the president orders someone to assassinate a rival? A rival. Can he get immunity for that? And Trump's attorney says, well, it would depend on the hypothetical. But I mean, based on the arguments that we've heard from the Justice Department, I would just say this. As long as the lawyer said it was okay, kill the guy. As long as you just have Justice Department memorandums all saying it was okay, you're good. You're good to go. Have the guy whacked. That's what I would say. All right, listen, Natural Lawn of America is going to give you that lush, thick, green lawn that you are loving, and you're going to love, absolutely. A beautiful lawn, fewer weeds, guaranteed, and I want you to act now to take advantage of Natural Lawn of America's amazing offer. They will seed your lawn for free every year. That's right. Natural Lawn of America will seed your lawn for free every year with their full service program. All you have to do is call them at 1-800-FREE-SEED. 1-800-FREE-SEED. You're going to love the work of Natural Lawn of America. You're going to love having greener grass. You're going to love having fewer weeds. And you are going to love that this is a local family-owned company right here in PA and New Jersey. And I've been using them for years, and I love the results. 1-800-FREE-SEED. That offer, free seeding every year for the rest of for your lawn every year, that ends at the end of this month. So please don't wait. Give them a call today, 1-800-FREE-SEED or naturallawn.com. Greener grass, fewer weeds, guaranteed.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
In case we haven't met, I'm Dino Colombo. I represent people hurt by a truck. It's what we do every day. Justice isn't just a word, it's your right. We'll stand up for you when others can't. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.
It's not just about watching the game, it's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it, it's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Scioli Show on your schedule from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT in the free Odyssey app.
All right, I got two great guys with me right now. We're hanging out. We're talking politics. I want to introduce you again to my friends, AJ Rice and Drew Allen. So AJ is the CEO of Publius PR and the author of The Woking Dead, How Society's Vogue Virus Destroys Our Culture. Drew is the vice president of client operations at Publius PR and author of America's Last Stand, Will You Vote to Save or Destroy America in 2024? Gentlemen, you've both been on independently, but now we're on together. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good. This is epic. We've been looking forward to this moment forever, having all three of us together here, the three musketeers.
Great to be here. Yeah, no, great to be here, Rich. I love talking to my hometown.
Let's first of all talk about Publius PR, because you guys do a great job of representing, I mean, mostly conservative authors, right?
Yeah, for the most part. But I mean, look, you know, conservatism at this point is many flavors. You know, it runs the gamut from, you know, Ron Paul libertarianism to, you know, Pat Buchanan sort of paleocon, you know, people, populism because of Trump and DeSantis. And then your sort of traditional, you know, defense contractor. No, I'm joking. But you're sort of traditional, economic conservative, family values voter. I mean, we've got them all. And every once in a while, we'll get a Democrat that, you know, wanders off the reservation like Dershowitz or Naomi Wolf or Tulsi Gabbard.
Mm-hmm. I saw a review recently from the American Spectator that said Tulsi Gabbard's book is a gutsy attempt to keep you free. And I mean, she's been on my show a couple times, and thank you for that. She's terrific. I think it's great. You know, Trump recently made a comment that he was a Democrat like Ronald Reagan was a Democrat, and he flipped parties. And I always say to people that doubt Tulsi, for example, don't forget that. I mean, don't forget that both of those two guys who are heroes to us as conservatives now were Democrats at one point. People can change. People change their ideas and their opinions on things. Happens all the time.
Well, and there's history there. I mean, they're the greatest advocates, Austin, and the converts to this cause. So if you want to Christianity, you can look at Saul turned Paul. You can look at Reagan. But these people that actually come from those environments and change, it says something about their character many times and their conviction. They oftentimes have conviction that somebody born into it will not. You know, somebody who isn't born Christian, for example, but converts. There's a lot of enthusiasm there. So yeah, you know. People should respect that when it's an authentic change and be excited about it. I certainly am, because, you know, those people are powerful individuals for movements.
AJ, let me ask you, The Woking Dead, How Society's Vogue Virus Destroys Our Culture. Do you think that people are waking up to what woke is and why woke is so destructive to society? Do you see a backlash occurring?
Absolutely. I mean, look, the last 4 or 5 years, this term has moved into the vernacular of political and popular culture. We have shamed them and mocked them, which is the way to go. Okay. And with The Woking Dead and with me personally, mockery sometimes is more important than facts. I got to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. If you could hang a joke, like Limbaugh used to say, you know, try not to be mean, but use irreverent humor to illustrate truth. So yeah, wokeism is, again, it has many shades to it. It's not just one thing. It's not, I mean, if it is monolithic, it would be cultural Marxism. It's practiced a bunch of different ways. So whether it's the Me Too movement or Black Lives Matter or Antifa or the trans mafia, no matter who it is, whichever, you know, flavor of Baskin and Robbins ice cream you're talking about, they all kind of have one goal in mind. And the micro goal is the destruction of the nuclear family. And if you go out broader like rings on a tree, the next step would be the destruction of the middle class. Because most Marxists know that when a society has a thriving middle class, they cannot take over. The workers of the world can't unite. And certainly cultural Marxists know that they will have no power if they cannot get people to pull out their grievance card and scream into the night that Western civilization has wronged me. Mm. So when you're talking about, when you're talking about wokeism, it's three things. It's Western civilization, it's the middle class, and it's the nuclear family. And if they can replace that, if the you know, Me Too movement or Black Lives Matter can replace that, I don't know with what, with I guess their bleak image, then they can control us. They can control the language. They can control shows like this. They can prevent Drew and I from writing books like we have. And they certainly can get politicians to fetch and step for them.
It's a great point about the middle class. I've never actually heard it put that way, but you're exactly right. And the destruction of the middle class is something. And, you know, it's funny, too, because some of the richest people are behind this. They've got all the money in the world, you know, as they watch workers get laid off, as they watch people hurt and towns get destroyed by this. So, Drew, let me ask you then, do you think that is part of the reason why Trump's populism has caught on with a lot of blue collar workers? I mean, to think that now the Republican Party is now the party of the working class, something the Democrats used to hang their hat on all the time. And I think, as James Carville once said, you know, the Democrat Party has become the party of the faculty lounge, and the Republican Party is now the party of the working class. Do you think there's a correlation there with that?
Yeah, I think so. Look, it's kind of ironic and interesting in some ways. Trump is certainly the man we need at this time. But I mean, this is a guy who shouldn't have anything in common with those people, right? I mean, he himself is a billionaire. It's not like But he has the ability to relate to anyone. You see him go into black communities, for example, and he doesn't put on a cadence like Hillary Clinton. I am here and I am black, really inside. You just don't know it.
She doesn't whip he doesn't whip out his hot sauce.
Yeah, he doesn't have to pull out the hot sauce from his purse, you know, or anything like that. You know, and I think they respect that, and there is something to that. And despite him being a billionaire, look at him. He's got a working mentality for sure. The guy is a workhorse. He's sitting there in court. He's out campaigning. And that resonates with people. And also people remember that their lives were better off under Trump. That's one of the things I remind people in my book, you know, are you better off today than you were under Trump? And if anybody answers that question objectively, it's no, you're screwed under this administration. Bring back Trump, baby.
Now, you say that this is America's last stand, and again, your book is called America's Last Stand, Will You Vote to Save or Destroy Democracy in 2024? I agree. I mean, this really is our last stand, because the deep state is trying so hard to stop Trump, and their power has grown exponentially. And what we saw happen with the Republicans, you know, surrendering on the border, giving the Democrats everything they wanted on Ukraine, giving warrantless spying on the American people. It's just, if this guy doesn't come in and be a bulldozer, I think we are done. I really do think this is America's last stand.
Well, it's been speculative in the past. I mean, if you read AJ's book, for example, and you read about what's going on with the cultural Marxism and all this wokeness and everything else. I mean, it's like we've been piling on weight to this country's back, you know, election after election, year after year after year, right? And you're speculating, oh, is this the one? Is this the one? This really is it. And you can see it everywhere around you. I mean, it's you know, I try and tell people, you know, we're the Patriots of 2024. You know, I don't want people to sit here and feel depressed. I want people to be motivated and excited that they should be excited that they're the ones that are alive right now to meet this moment. And all of us are a part of American history. We have, you know, great legacy of people, the founding fathers, Lincoln and World War II. You know, a lot of people that we can look at and say, thank God these people lived at this time to save the country. Well, now that's us. So, you know, let's pull ourselves up. Let's be optimistic and, you know, let's fight for the country.
AJ, I see that Trump's got the appeal right now. I mean, he's winning with Hispanics. He's doing great with black voters. He's also doing better with young voters, too. But I think what's worse for Biden is the fact that what we're seeing with these college campuses right now and these lunatics who are protesting, and he's got a real problem, particularly, I think, in Michigan and Minnesota, where you've got young people who think that Biden is capitulating to Israel. I mean, we look at his support of Israel and we think, you call that support, but in their mind, the fact that Biden's not chanting to the river to the sea with them, it means that he's part of the problem. If those young people are obviously not going to vote for Trump, but they may just stay home or they may vote third party, I don't see them coming back to him. I see him having real problems, particularly in those two states, with these young crazy voters.
Sure. The Democrat Party has long, especially in the modern era, fertilized different flavors of totalitarianism. And when the October 7th attack happened, I was amused that so many former or current left-wing radical Bernie Sanders supporters, many of them Jewish, some of them in the entertainment industry, like the Sarah Silvermans and Michael Rappaport's and Chuck Schumer's chubby niece, Amy Schumer, were so shocked. They were so shocked that the American left, Black Lives Matter, comes out, supports Hamas. These people in the totalitarian rowboat with them that loved Bernie Sanders also were screaming about the extermination of Israel and pretty much the Jewish diaspora. I'm not shocked because totalitarians, if they're committing an intifada against the culture, Western civilization, Western culture, Judeo-Christianity, they will team up. The most racist regime of the 20th century, which were the Germans during World War II, teamed up with the Italians, who they didn't even consider to be white, rich, and the Asian Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
So they can put aside their momentary racial supremacy for certain things. And when it comes to hating Jews, there's a long history of totalitarians teaming up. So this is how you get queers for Palestine. You got the trans mafia working hand in glove with Hamas and with Hamas supporters on these college campuses to hunt down Jewish students. So if there are things that unite all of our enemies, like I said, it's the destruction of the middle class, the destruction of Western civilization, and like Black Lives Matter said on their website when they you know became popular, the destruction of the nuclear family. They're all in for this. So yes, Biden and the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi over the years, the Clintons, the Obamas, they have fertilized this incubator of little Nazis, and they're alive and well on college campuses. And like you said about James Carville and the faculty lounge, the faculty lounges of these universities, especially in the Ivy League, are little madrasas that are encouraging this behavior.
And Drew, I look at what's taking place right now also in the context of economics in all of this and what people are thinking about over and over and what they're talking about. And they keep coming back to the economy. Democrats want to make this election a referendum on abortion. They want it. Trump destroying democracy and all the other things, you know, scare people about Trump and scare people that he's going to be, you know, the next dictator and that sort of thing. But I don't think that is what people are thinking about at all going into 2024. I mean, particularly in the six or seven states that matter, and Pennsylvania being one of them. I mean, I think you win Pennsylvania, you win the keys to the White House. Not that they're our actual keys, but you win the White House. I think that the number one issue on people's minds right now, it has to still be the economy. It has to still be inflation. It has to still be the economy. Stupid, to quote James Carville again. But every state's now a border state, too. So what impact does that have on people, you think, going into November?
Well, I mean, these are deadly issues, politically speaking, for the Democrat Party right now. No doubt about it. I mean, I think the economy and probably the border have to be, and they probably are, if I picked up a poll today, the top two issues for American voters. I mean, there are people that buy the propaganda. These are, you know, the totalitarian-minded people that AJ was just talking about, that just, you know, I mean, they can't crawl out of it. Nobody can pull them out of that hole. But for most people, I mean, it is. I mean, when you can't put food on the table, I got gas the other day here. I mean, granted, I live in the communist state of California, but it was $6.40 for a gallon. Mm-hmm. And this is creeping back up again. And all you hear from the Biden administration is obviously propaganda. They don't want to talk about it. But, you know, I mean, and that's why I felt it was so important to remind people the crimes, really, of this administration, because I've written articles about this, and I call it like the arson strategy of the Democrat Party. I mean, they're lighting new fires every day, all the time, and you can't even remember what they did yesterday. I mean, the Afghanistan debacle, that seems like so long ago. The spy balloon flying across the country over Montana. I mean, all these things. Inflation is transitory. I mean, it's just thing after thing after thing. And they're hoping, of course, yeah, they can distract with the Trump trials and they can distract with, you know, making this a abortion issue. But, you know, I mean, I don't know what it is. I mean, you know, if you want the abortion, you know, before 15 weeks, or you want food on the table. I don't know.
Well, guys, listen. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, AJ.
Let me just weigh in real quick, and I'm not trying to be cute here, but I am from Philadelphia, about the abortion issue, okay? Here's the thing. Young people, brace yourself, are not having sex. Gen Z is not having sex. The boomers and Gen X, they're not having abortions because they've all gone through menopause, okay? So they need to create an issue out of this. I could send you a million stories that no one's in the clubs. No one's in the clubs on South Street in Philadelphia. No one's in the clubs in South Beach. And if they are, it's an older demo. Why? Because Gen Z, in particular, are isolated, digital universe people. Their avatars might be having sex inside of the gaming systems that they're trapped inside of. But they don't listen to music. They do video games and TikTok instead. They're not having abortions. They don't even care because they're not going on dates. This, I mean, it's an amazing thing. They are not interacting. They're not interacting the way past even the millennials, young people did. It's a weird thing. It's part of the bigger problem of the trans mafia and the obsession with the digital universe. But they're trying to, like, they're pulling an old, like, 60s, 80s, 90s Bill Clinton playbook to try to scare these young people about abortion, when in reality, they got a better luck of trying to promise them, you know, free college tuition, and that they won't ban TikTok, and that, they'll send them government money. They want free stuff. And it's a cultural thing that these dummy boomers and these dummy Gen X Democrats don't realize. And it backfired. People said during the midterm that there wasn't a red wave because of Roe versus Wade. I don't know. Young people did show up, and they showed up because they thought they were going to get their underwater lesbian basket weaving bachelor's degree paid for by everyone listening to this show right now.
Guys, let's do this again. It's been a lot of fun, and I think you guys are right on the money with this. Get their books, The Woking Dead, How Society's Vogue Virus Destroys Our Culture, from Philly's own AJ Rice, and Drew's book, America's Last Stand, Will You Vote to Save or Destroy America in 2024? Guys, let's do this again. Have a great rest of your night, and we'll have more to chat about as we get closer to November, no doubt about it. Keep the fun coming.
Thanks, Rich.
Thank you, brother.
And I want to tell you about my friends at Cherry Hill Volvo, because their amazing sale that's going on right now, their renovation special, is outstanding. And you got to get there. You got to get to Cherry Hill Volvo today, because Judith knows that there's a, you know, it's a little inconvenient sometimes to deal with a renovation, and they're working on Route 70. So to make that up to you, she's doubling down on their already aggressive incentives. And that means real savings for you. Real savings for you. And whether it's the beautiful S60, the S-Class, the S90 made at their plant in South Carolina, American Jobs, or you want the XC90, that third row SUV to get the kids down the shore safe and sound, you'll find a beautiful selection of cars and wonderful people who are there to serve you every step of the way. And because we broadcast live from the Cherry Hill Volvo studios, they stand with us more than any other Volvo dealership in all the land. There's only one. that stands with Talk Radio 1210 WPHD as our studio sponsor, and that's Cherry Hill Volvo. So please go see them today. They're minutes over the bridge on Route 70, and it's really not that hard. The road work, the renovation, no big deal. But your opportunity to save, because they already have aggressive incentives for spring, and then doubling down on that with the renovation special. And my friends at Cherry Hill Volvo, where relationships matter.
Thanks for listening to the Scioli Show podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Odyssey app.
All right, before I turn it over to the great one, Mark Levin, just a reminder, a week from tomorrow, we're live in K-May at the Grand Hotel of K-May, New Jersey. Don't miss it. This is a union guy, New York union leader Bobby Bartles, says most of his union workers are Democrats, but they're supporting Trump in 2024. He said he conducted a poll of his 9,000 members, and Trump is leading them 3-1. He did an interview with Fox News, and he described this. And this is why I tell you, this is why I talked about with my buddies AJ and Drew, Trump has the support of the working class
people.
In
the past, we are basically Democrats, all of us. And after what's happened the last 4 years in this country, Democrats are basically pushing everybody to the other side. We're a very patriotic group, and we love our country, and we want the best for America. We are tired of immigration. We're tired of our tax dollars going to immigration. We're tired of the crime. We need to put a handle on things in this country and bring it back to how it should be. I put out a poll in my union. President Trump is leading Joe Biden 3-1 on my presidential poll out of my 9,000 members right now. We are very tired of the situation with groceries, inflation, gas prices, illegal immigration, crime. We're living it every day in New York City.
Every day. And he's not alone. Oh, and that reminds me, too. Remember what the head of the United Auto Workers Union said after he endorsed Biden? He said a great majority, not just a majority, a great majority of my members will be voting for Trump. This is a New York City resident here. He's black. I don't know the name of the gentleman. This was posted by Addison Smith TV on Twitter. His message to Joe Biden. He's got a hat on that says American worker. Take a listen.
How was it seeing the former president?
Oh, it was absolutely incredible to see him on the streets of Manhattan, meeting up with, you know, your working class folks here, the type that are out working hard at 6 a.m. It was my first time ever meeting him, and it was really dope. So,
what's your message to Joe Biden?
My message to Joe Biden: I haven't seen you anywhere. I hope New York turns red because we're not voting for you.
How you doing?
Boom! Love it. There you go. That's it. That's what you got to know right there. We haven't seen you. Hope New York turns blue or red, excuse me, because we're not voting for you. The working class people are with Trump. That's the bottom line. They're with Trump. And everything about this upcoming election in Pennsylvania, Trump wins Pennsylvania. He wins the White House. That's what happens. That's how it works. And these court cases against him. And look, you know, I'll just say one thing on the presidential immunity. This question of official acts, whether or not a president is doing something in his official capacity or not his official capacity. And this question, if the court goes down that road and starts to delineate this, you're going to run into a big problem. But I am worried that they're going to essentially now kick that can down the road, which doesn't hurt Trump now, but it could hurt the institution of the presidency. Because if the high court remands it down to the lower court to sort out that question, that's one of the options they could do. They could say, we want the lower court to first tell us, in their opinion, what is a private act? What is a official act? What acts would be covered by this institutional immunity argument, and what acts would be deemed private? And as a president acting as a private citizen, if they do that and kick the can down the road, that's only going to delay it further for Jack Smith, who's going to be very, very angry about that. But that means that Trump's off the hook because it won't be before the election. No question about it. But I do worry about that for the presidency of the United States, because that was the question that was asked and the back and forth today. And I played this earlier in the show today with Justice Amy Coney Barrett. And asking this question of, well, you know, was Trump acting as a candidate in a private manner? working to deal with the 2020 election? Is that that's private? It's election. It's campaign stuff. So it's not presidential related. Would those be considered official acts? And Trump's attorney conceded that certain of aspects of that were not official acts because they were deemed campaign acts. So this is where you're going to have to figure this out. And if it is remanded down to the lower court and they have to take a look at this, that's only going to delay it further for Jack Smith. And bottom line is this. This case on the federal level goes nowhere. The Great One, Mark Levin, is up next. Have a great rest of your night. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Back with you tomorrow for our Friday edition, 3 to 7 p.m. Keep the conversation going on Twitter, at Rich Zeoli. Thank you.
Rich Zeoli, weekday afternoons, 3 to 7, Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and on the free Odyssey app.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.